Attention Austin guitarist, are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's my friend Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the very best job, but he has the fastest service and the best prices in town. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Gang, whether it's acoustic or electric, Jason is your guy. Get your guitars fixed.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week this week. I've had a good week. I've had kind of an intense week. My dog Rosie, who's a puppy, she's like 15 months old or so. That's what the vet thinks. Had like a chunk like out of her side on Monday. She, you know, we'd gone and played at the park. We had gone on these long walks. I don't know if she rubbed up against something like a fence when she was running fast, but it's almost like a divot, like from a golf course. Like when someone, it's like a little chunk taken out. So. Been trying to keep that clean, but having that, like trying to do something like that with a 15 month old dog is really difficult 24 hours a day. But I found this new solution. I'm in a t-shirt zone because the cone is not an option for Rosie. There's a complete meltdown freak out that happens. She starts running into shit and it's really sad and weird. Anyway, so I've been doing a t-shirt. I've been spraying this stuff for like farm animals and dogs when they cut themselves to sort of heal it and keep it clean. And I think we're doing pretty good. So that's kind of been like the main focus of my week this week. It sounds weird. It sounds weird, but that really has been like the single dog parent. I should start a new podcast for single dog parents. Hey guys, what are you doing with your dog when she cuts herself on the side? Well, I've developed a t-shirt thing that keeps her from licking herself. Oh, Jesus. Hey, I want to welcome any new listeners today because I do, gang, I have a great show for you guys today. I have this amazing songwriter, Gareth Dunlop from Belfast, Ireland. He just released an album today. It's available now everywhere, wherever it is you find albums. It's called Animal, and it's on Gingerbread Man Records, which is Ed Sheeran's label. So he's on the label owned by Ed Sheeran. He's produced a couple of bands that are on the label as well, Lee Rogers and Foy Vance. And he's had a pretty damn successful career as a songwriter, and he's had songs on the show Nashville, Lucifer, This Is Us. These are huge, huge shows here in America. Commercials for Subaru, Disney. He's opened for Jeff Beck, Van Morrison, Snow Patrol, and so many others. He dropped out of high school at 15 to go to music school and won like best young songwriter. He's a fascinating dude, and we have a fantastic conversation over Zoom from Belfast. But I want to let you guys know that he will be on tour here in the U.S. May 6th through May 31st. And you can go to GarethDunlop.com for all of your Gareth Dunlop needs. Find out if he's coming to a town near you. And if you don't know Gareth Dunlop, if you're like a regular listener of the show, I promise you, man, this is not going to listen to it. The guy's a great, great musician. He made this great record. It's like, it's beautiful. He incorporates all of the things that are happening in music now and still has a very soulful, beautiful songwriting style. It's fucking great. He's great. So without further ado, enjoy my conversation with this fine gentleman, Gareth Dunlop. Let's get down.
I like it quiet in my soul, so I can hear the earth turn below. I am an enigma to myself and simple to others. I think too much and say too little. I pour.
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in Belfast in the north of Ireland.
So that's where you, what time is it there?
It's like 8:30 in the evening.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me. You have a family, don't you?
I do indeed. Yes, I've got a daughter and a son. Yep.
Congratulations. How old are they?
Joni, my daughter, is 8, and Wilson, my son, he's 5.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. It's fun times.
Yeah. Is everyone going back to school now and stuff and kind of getting back to life?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was, they missed out on so much, like a lot of kids, you know?
Yeah.
And thankfully they're back in full swing and, you know, getting on with things, which is great.
Yeah. Well, dude, I'm really glad to have you on the show. Your album Animal, which is going to drop on April 22nd. I'm pretty sure that, I don't know, this, it might be out by the time this comes out. Not sure yet.
Okay.
But
cool.
Fucking great, man. You are a great songwriter, a great singer too. You have such a great, do you ever listen to Richard Howley?
Oh, it's been a long time since I've listened to Richard Howley, but I am familiar.
There's something about that sort of like croony kind of like lower register voice thing. Like a dude's definitely singing.
Oh, yeah, man, I'll take it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, man. So, you produced or co-produced this record yourself?
Yes, there's a couple of tracks on there that I had some co-production on. But for the majority, it was me sitting here at the console here in Belfast, just, you know, putting shit together. And
that's
and
in your house?
Stuff out. Yeah, it's the front room
that's
of the house.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a vibe. It works for now, and you know it's not like the deadest of rooms. It kind of has a little bit of a kind of like a short kind of ambience. You know, it's pretty difficult to remove from most signals, but you know it is what it is.
Yeah. You know what's funny is, how old are you?
I have to think about this. I'm 34.
Okay. Do you remember when David Gray put out that record and people freaked out?
Like, oh man!
In the year 2000.
Oh shit! You couldn't turn on the radio, or you couldn't turn a corner without hearing that song out of the show.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is I feel like what he was doing then.
Mm.
You have taken whatever that is and taken the next, like brought it into 2022, like that same sensibility of like. Singer, like a singer-songwriter, a person who focuses on the lyrics and melody of a song and often tells a story, but then also like this electronic stuff going on, which gives it a little bit of lightness to it and gives it actually, you know, makes it fun to listen to because sometimes folk music can sound real boring.
You know what, man, I really appreciate that. Yeah. It was, you know, for me, that was the hardest thing about this record was, you know, I didn't want to dilute, like, the, I mean, essentially, I mean, I play guitar, I play piano, and I sing, and I write songs, you know,
yeah.
I have a great love for Americana music, and I didn't want that to get kind of diluted down, but I've done EPs, I've done singles, I've done records that way, where it's, you know, trying to capture, you know, a live band in a room, and, you know, for this album, I wanted to challenge myself a little bit, you know, I discovered, I was late to the synthesizer game, you know. And I discovered a Juno 60 and never quite recovered. So,
so it's always the Juno, like ever since like 1980, that's the one that everyone's like, I got this Juno and everything changed, man.
Yeah, that's it. So I just, you know, I wanted to, you know, there were a couple of occasions where it was like, I'd start with like a cool patch on a synth and be like, damn, there's a song in there and try to write towards like the sound almost. And a lot of the time that just kind of fell on its face, you know, and I kind of found that, okay, I just need to start from where I know. I need to sit at the piano. I need to start from square one. I need to start with the guitar on my lap and then go, all right, how do I turn this on its head? And how do I try to, you know, bring this other kind of world that I haven't been, you know, involved in at all? How do I bring that into the equation? So that was... That was the grand experiment of this record for me.
Yeah. How do you view yourself as like a folk singer or like an Americana artist or?
It's strange, man. You know, it's not a whole thing. Like I'm sure you've had it countless times yourself. It's like somebody asks you to describe, okay, yeah. So how do we, you know, we know what's in the paint, but what, you know, what are you going to wrap around the outside of it? to tell people what it is.
Yeah.
I'm just influenced by what I'm into at any particular time.
Right.
I feel like if I'm listening to a bunch of 70s rock for whatever reason, you know, it's like, shit, I want to go and make a 70s rock record, you know. Yeah. I need to go find my Les Paul, you know.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I spent a long time in Nashville and flying back and forth from there. I'm doing a lot of co-writing. I'm doing a lot of writing for the Americana market. And just soaking that whole vibe up, I absolutely fell in love with it. Fell in love with the writers in Nashville and just fell in love with that whole sound. So, you know, for a long time, I was putting out music that, you know, was kind of centered around that whole vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the last few years, stepping away from that a little bit, that's where the electronic side of things kind of started to creep in. And it was like, oh, okay, I wonder, you know, I'm into that right now, so let's see what would happen if I open that door.
Well, it seems like that happens with like singer-songwriters in the UK. It's like, it's totally okay to do that. From David Gray to Ed Sheeran to you, it's totally normal, but you're not going to hear that on a Tim McGraw record.
No.
Or a Shooter Jennings record. Sorry, I didn't mean to make you cough. But you know what I mean?
No, I hear you.
Interesting, the liberty that you guys have, like you guys have a freedom over there that you can exercise that guys over here can't really do.
You know, I don't, I mean, haven't said that. I mean, if I had, you know, a million, you know, adoring fans, you know, just wanting the next, you know, the next record to sound, you know, just like the first, and, you know, just with the same heartfelt songs and songs about life and, you know, the big subjects and stuff. If I was in Tim McGraw's shoes, I might keep putting out the same stuff because it works. I think because I'm at a place in my career where I am afforded a little bit of experimentation, I should say.
Yeah, you've worked with him, right?
So I didn't work directly with him. No, when I was a staff writer for Universal in Nashville for a few years. And, you know, every week there's the hit list comes in. It's like, here's who's looking, here's who's shopping for what, here's the producer that's working on it. And, you know, you do the thing where you co-write a couple of times a day and you demo stuff up and send it off. And I got a song with a couple of writers and, you know, it went off to his people and he jumped up and down and he put it on hold. And it's strange. I've had a lot of songs be put on hold.
So that's what they do first. Like, just for our listeners, like what they do is they'll put a hold on your song. You can't give it to anyone else yet.
Yeah.
And do they give you something for that hold? Do you get something out of it? Like, do they give you $2,000 hang on for a week or something?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, I can't speak for some of the heavy hitters in Nashville. Maybe that's the case, but, no, that's never happened for me.
Well, that kind of sucks, you know, because then what if someone else wants the song, but they can't get it because the other guy has the hold on it, and then you lose that song because they go ahead and move forward with whatever they're doing.
It happens, man.
It's a gambling game.
It is a total gambling game, and you know, a lot of the time you don't hear whether your song made it or not until, you know, because a lot of the time they'll record it, they'll put it on the session, they'll put it on the docket, they'll produce it up, and it won't be until the album goes to print that it may fall off.
Right.
So you could be sitting there for 9 months going, okay, I got a song on this record. I'm not here until that first single comes out that your song didn't make it.
Right. So you did okay with like the appointments, like going to the appointment and doing the thing with the person you've never met, and you get in the room and you got to make something out of nothing.
It was never truly like my intention to kind of fall into that. And I loved it. I did. I grew to love it and grew to kind of embrace it and learn an awful lot from it. But, you know, for me, growing up, songwriting was always kind of like this personal, sacred thing.
Yeah.
That took time, it took patience, and it was from this, you know, the moon had to be shining just right. And, you know, it was this whole thing.
Right.
So jumping in and writing, you know, two songs a day, and as you say, a lot of that was, hey, nice to meet you. Okay, what are we writing about? And, you know, sometimes the stars align and you get a song that, you know, that just speaks to the moment, you know, that we're both writers are really into it. And a lot of the time as well, it's just, it can feel a little mundane. It can feel a little like you're just trying to fill a hole in somebody else's record.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I really did take away from it was, it's kind of just like hanging around your tribe, you know. It's like you find your family.
Exactly.
And you're hanging around other writers who are just on that same journey. They're beating that pavement just like you.
Right.
So they're, for the most part, amazing people to be around, and you pick up some great chops as well, sitting with incredible writers.
Yeah. I have that experience, but in L.A., with rock people.
Right.
There was a lot of a lot of smoking weed and going for walks.
Okay. I got it.
It was good, but there was a focus because I was the artist, but I was kind of sent to have all of these collaborations and co-writes with all these people. And, you know, I made a couple of lifelong friends out of it. One guy really almost was like a fifth member of the band. Once he and I did like one song together, then like I brought him in and we wrote a lot of songs with him as just like an extra guy.
You know, there's nothing, there's something to be said for, like, you know, you could spend a month with somebody, going drinking with them every night, and you won't get to know that person as well as you'll get to know somebody sitting down and writing a song.
That's exactly right.
You know, it's on a different level. It's, you know, you gotta be vulnerable to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And you gotta, you know, we're all writing essentially about the same big themes in life, you know, life, love, loss, friendship, future, past, all the stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Being able to put that out onto the table, your own views on that shit,
yeah,
and your own feelings on that shit, it definitely takes a bit of courage and a bit of vulnerability. So yeah, I totally get that. I can totally empathize with that, just hitting it off with somebody and feeling that brotherhood.
I wonder how many people realize a lot of times it is two dudes like getting that deep together, you know, like shit that like my dad, if he heard what I was talking about with these guys, would like disown me. You know what I mean?
I know. And then in Nashville, you know, you got the country, like the super kind of macho, you know, I don't know what love is kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm too macho for that. And all the while there's, you know, couple of dudes in a room, you know, crying over a page.
Yeah.
trying to get these songs out, you know. Yeah, man, what a trip.
Yeah, what a wild thing, man. So I'm trying to figure out how to do this because I get stuff from publicists, you know. They send you stuff,
sure,
and you go listen to the thing. And I didn't know you. I hadn't heard of you, and I went and listened to your record, and I was really moved. Like, I think you're a really amazing songwriter. And
thank you, man.
Yeah, man. Let's you picked up the guitar at 14 years old?
Yeah, around 13, 14. It was it came out of nowhere. It was just like this bolt out of the blue. I mean I wasn't really around music that much growing up. And I mean, we used to sing in the back of the car and stuff, but you know, it was never around me in any professional way. I saw this picture of a guitar in like a catalog, and, you know, the year before it was probably, you know, a skateboard, and I was just, you know, oh, okay, for whatever reason, it was this catalog Encore Stratocaster, and I pestered my dad about getting this thing, and he probably thought it would, you know, would end up just like the skateboard did, you know, just kind of hiding in the garage. But it just hit a nerve in me, and I had to have this thing. And so I started practicing on his old beat-up guitar that never saw the light of day. I mean, he could never play. I didn't even know why he had it. But I practiced on his old Yamaha. And eventually, I think it might have been from a birthday, I got this Stratocaster and plugged it in. And, you know, it came with its own little practice amp and stuff. And that was it. You know, I just wanted to play as fast and as loud as I could. And because I had an electric guitar, I wanted to listen to music that had electric guitars on it. So I started discovering bands like Deep Purple and Zeppelin and Fleetwood Mac and Jimi Hendrix and all that stuff, which was, you know, I was never ever exposed to growing up, but I seeked it out.
Yeah, none of those bands come through in your music right now.
No, I hear you. Not yet.
No. What was going on musically at that time? Like at the time, because you it wasn't like you were 13 in 1968. Neither of us were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, musically, so I grew up as the youngest of four. So my two older sisters would have been living at home at the time, and they would have had the Ghetto Blasters, and they would have been listening to Madonna and Cyndi Lauper, and you know a lot of 80s stuff.
Yeah.
So that I do think about like a lot of that definitely seeped into my psyche somewhere. You know, like there's a familiarity with a lot of those sounds and a lot of those kind of big melodies.
Yeah.
So that was happening. And then my brother, my older brother, he had taken this love affair with U2. And me and my brother we're very alike in that if we like something, we obsess over it. So
right.
He it was just U2, and he didn't play anything else for what felt like 5 years. So it was Madonna, Cyndi Lauper, and U2.
That's awesome.
I would say that was rattling around the family home at the time. And then my dad, he would have listened to, you know, back then was very obscure for me and probably anybody I knew, but he listened to a lot of Irish traditional music. He played a little bit of mandolin. He would have been listening to Planxty and Paul Brady and a lot of that kind of stuff.
Do they, like, you know, different cultures have, I'm Cuban, both of my parents were born in Cuba, so like, you know, there's like, the salsa is like the sound of my grandma's house, you know what I mean? But like,
gotcha.
You too just seems like, I thought everyone there, I thought that would be their favorite band, and then the Waterboys.
Yeah, you too, Waterboys, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is part of growing up, I think, you know, a lot of households got the U2 bug, you know.
Yeah.
And I've had it for 30 years.
Yeah.
It's you know, they're huge band.
Huge.
Yeah, especially band.
Yeah. So when did you start a band at any point? Like, when did you?
A couple of friends. Like, I tried to coax some friends into being musicians as well, because you know I sort of said it would be really cool, but I think I secretly just wanted some comrades, you know. I needed some like-minded fools to play with. So I had a buddy, Craig, and he played some guitar, played a little bit of drums, and then I had another friend, Colin, who learned a little bit of bass, and together we had a three-piece terrible cover band. Just it was my musical outlet to let rip on the Les Paul and play some Zeppelin, you know.
Yeah.
And we didn't do many gigs. In fact, we hardly did any at all. But it was a total ego trip, you know, just being that age, being so young, and just wanting to be a rock star.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, I ended up by the skin of my teeth getting into music college, and that's when I found my tribe and found my people, you know.
All right. So sorry, you were saying. You were talking about the cover band, then you moved on to the next thing. Like,
okay,
next
so we got, yeah, I think we got to music college. So,
right.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's not about
you found
my
your tribe.
So, yeah, find my tribe, find my family. You know, like-minded fools, all that good stuff. And I got my first cover gig. It was in this bar that we used to kind of frequent at lunchtime. It was a bar close to the college. And I just asked them one lunch. I said, "Hey, you ever need anybody to play some music in here? You know, I'm your guy." And they took me up on it. And I'll never forget playing on like a Friday night and somebody handing me like money at the end of it and thinking, "This is crazy. Somebody's going to pay me for this shit. This is great." So that kind of started the ball rolling with just playing a lot of cover gigs, playing and. Playing in jazz trios, playing weddings, playing everything going,
so
playing funerals, playing birthdays, everything.
When you went to funerals?
Yeah, everything going. Yeah, yeah.
Jesus,
ceremonies,
man.
You name it.
Going to music school gave you like the jazz stuff and all of that. Like it broadened your language of music.
I think, yeah, no, it totally did. I mean, it wasn't focused on jazz by at all, really, but they did a lot of music theory, which definitely, like, opened my mind to, like, that side of stuff, because I had no understanding of that. In fact, when I first applied to get in the music college, they turned me away because I didn't know how to read. I couldn't read notation. And I had to go back and learn how to do that and then reset the test to actually get in. So they covered a lot of that side of stuff, which just opened up a new world to me. So and a lot of the guys that were in the college were very into jazz, you know. So I was like, hey, well, let's start a jazz band, let's start a funk band, let's start a soul band, let's do this, let's do that.
Yeah.
So it was a cool way to kind of you know, to hone your craft.
Yeah.
Learning the real book.
It seems like in your singing there is it seems like you spent some time listening to soul. Not like you're trying to be a soul singer, but your timing and everything is very soulful.
Yeah, no, 100%. I was in a soul kind of blues band for probably 3 or 4 years, and before I did that, I was right around when I was in college, and I didn't have that much. No, I mean, I heard like Aretha Franklin, I'd heard, you know, Benny King, I'd heard the classics and stuff.
Right.
But I, you know, when I joined that band as the singer, you know, they gave me a CD just full of shit to kind of learn and to get my head around. A lot of obscure Stevie Wonder stuff and just stuff that I'd never heard. A lot of like Wilson Pickett B-sides and a lot of Muscle Shoals and a lot of Stack stuff. And I just threw myself into it and, you know, tried to be like, okay, well, I'll see if I can try to kind of emulate their inflections and pop it. That weird thing in like a soul R&B vocal, it's as much about the pocket of where
totally.
The lyric lands as it is about the melody and how it's kind of approached. But that pocket, how it kind of fits into the backbeat is, how they did it anyway, it's just masterful.
Yeah. I was trying to explain explain what I meant when I said feel to like one of my cousins a few weeks ago. Mm. And I was like, it's the space between the notes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone's is different because everyone's space between the notes is just a little bit different. And that's what makes it feel a certain way.
That's it. 100%. It's the anticipation, isn't it?
Yeah.
The anticipation, the breath between passages, the breath between notes and rhythm.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. You know, the same band, you know, two bands playing the same song, exact notation, the same instruments, same night, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Because of the human quality.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I just listened to that record. You ever listen to Sly and the Family Stone? You listen to a lot of them?
I haven't listened to enough. I mean, I'm familiar, but it's not a band that I went down the rabbit hole with. But yeah, I mean, Sly and the Family Stone.
This record of theirs, Fresh. If You Want Me to Stay is on it.
Okay.
That song?
Yeah.
I listened to that whole record the other day and just was like astonished at that, like how that can, that space between those notes can really enhances the character of your voice. You know what I'm saying? Or the way that the character of the singer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So then you go through music school, you got the jazz, funk and soul bands. And then what happened when you finished music school?
So I'd been kind of flirting with writing, you know, while doing all these cover gigs and stuff. I'd kind of been writing some of my own stuff and I'd moved away from the electric guitar and, you know, kind of discovered, you know, Neil Young and Bob Dylan, and Joni Mitchell and John Martin and folks like that. And then the like fingerstyle stuff and was kind of one of those moments of, okay, now I want to do this, you know, change gears. So I think I released a little EP that I'd recorded pretty badly. And then I got the chance to play at what's called the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival, which happens every year here in Belfast. Belfast and Nashville are sister cities in the arts, which I didn't know back then. So they run these festivals, and I was asked to come along and, you know, play my little songs, and I think I played in the round. And after that, they gave me a Young Songwriter Award, and they took me to Nashville with a bunch of other songwriters from Belfast, and we, you know, went over there and learned a little bit about the industry and played. We played a couple of showcases, and one of those showcases was in the Bluebird Cafe.
Right.
Nashville. So I played that showcase, and right after it, I was approached by a publisher who came up out of the crowd, and she said, "Hey, you know, just you want to get a coffee? What do you have going on? You know, are you published?" And I think my response was something like, "I don't even know what that is, so I'm pretty sure I'm not published." So she was really gracious, and we went for coffee, and she explained the whole thing to me, and you know, gave me a little bit of an insight into, you know, the business of songwriting. So right. I came home, we stayed in touch. And I think about 3 or 4 weeks later, she flew me back to Nashville.
Wow.
And had me, you know, writing with great writers and playing some of the showcases. I played a film and TV showcase. And that was really, really crazy. I mean, at this point, I probably had like maybe 15 songs to my name, and maybe two of them were okay. You know, in my, but you know, looking back, and the rest of them were like kind of half baked. You know, there was maybe some good ideas there, but and she, you know, she rolled the dice and said there's something. She thought, you know, there was something there and something to build on. I played this film and TV showcase, and one of the songs got used in a couple of TV shows, which was like, my mind was just completely blown. I came home from that, and shortly after that, yeah, there was, you know, there was, I think it was One Tree Hill was one of the shows.
Yeah.
Which was a big hairy deal here in Belfast, you know, like a lot of friends and stuff watched it, and to be able to kind of go, "Hey, I've got a song in this show, you're never going to believe it." So things, yeah, that was the start of, I think, songwriting as a profession. And it, you know, until probably 3 years ago, it had been 10 or 11 years of going back and forth to Nashville and back and forth to, you know, New York and LA and doing that whole thing.
That's crazy. Do you know this guy named Pat Byrne?
Pat Byrne?
Yep.
The name's really, really familiar.
He won like the Irish Voice.
Okay.
He's
the first
winner of it or something like that.
Okay.
But he lives here now in Austin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Do you ever get down here, play shows?
You know, that's on my bucket list, man. That's something I really want to do. I have a lot of friends who have been to play shows, and I really want to do it. There's, do you know of a guy, you know, he passed away long ago, a guy called Walter Hyatt.
Yeah.
Ever cross that name?
Yeah.
So me, my wife and I and the kids, we were in Nashville for like with 3 or 4 months. I think Wilson was only like 2 months old at the time. We were staying out there when I was doing some writing, and the Airbnb that we were staying at, the girl who owned it would see me coming and going every day with my guitar. And eventually she said, "Hey, look, I'd love to give you some of my husband's music. You know, he's passed away now, but we're doing what we can to, you know, to keep his music alive." Yeah. And she handed me a Walter Hyatt CD, which was something I hadn't heard of, but that record, I think it's called Unfinished Business. It was released.
I don't know the record, but I know the dude. Yeah.
Yeah. And, that became the soundtrack for that entire trip. And, you know, everyone I spoke to was just like, "Man, Texas legend, you know, very, very highly regarded."
Totally. So, yeah.
I'd love to get there, man. I'd love to spend some time in Austin, particularly.
I feel like people would really like you here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Seemed like you'd fit right in. musically and everything. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna do it. It's on the list.
So you're going on tour of the states May 6th through 31st, but basically keeping it up north and to the east.
Yeah. So I'm opening up for a friend of mine, a great songwriter, great performer, a guy called Foy Vance. If anybody isn't familiar with his music, check it out. He's a powerhouse, and actually he's one of the reasons I got into music in the first place was watching him and going, okay, how do I do that?
Yeah.
So I'm opening up his North American run.
Awesome.
And we're going through a lot of places I've never been before. And it's my first time. It's going to be my first time on a big bus, on a sleeper.
Oh, awesome.
That's I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm a creature of comfort. I'm somebody who likes their own space. So this is the grand experiment to see just how well I'll deal.
It's better than a van.
You know what? I'll bet. I've done the van thing. Thankfully, never had to sleep in a van. We've always had hotels and stuff. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So this is your first bus tour. You're going out for about a month, so.
About a month, yeah. And you know, coming out of COVID, where you know nobody's really been anywhere, I've really become accustomed to just being around my kids, you know, and being around family.
Yeah.
These last few years, it's been a real luxury. You know, I've missed in the past. You know, I've missed key moments. I've missed birthdays. I've missed first words and, you know, first steps, the whole thing. So I'm definitely a little bit nervous, I think, about being away again.
Yeah.
You know, after a prolonged period of being around them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the way I kind of put that right in my head is, you know, when I'm home.
Yeah.
I try not to do much else. When I'm here, I'm home. I've got the studio here in the house, and they're constantly running in and out, and you know, making a racket. And they're surrounded by it. So it is a month away, but you know, the days that I am home, I just try to make sure that I'm accessible at all times.
Yeah, yeah, that's nice though. It's nice to hear that somebody's feeling like that and not like
yeah. Just you know, got to be honest about it. You know, it's as excited as I am about, you know, getting out and playing these songs in front of folks and trying to win hearts and minds. That's,
you want to hang out with your kids.
That's the other side of it, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this. How Gingerbread Man Records, that's Ed Sheeran's label?
Yeah.
And so is there like a whole staff that you got an A&R guy and like?
So this is... Boy's record, the record that I had produced. So he is an Atlantic artist through Gingerbread Man. So my dealing on the business side of producing that record was really just through Foy and his manager. Uh-huh. I didn't have much connection with any of Ed's camp at all, to be honest with you. But a great record to be involved in, and it was a, you know, the joys of technology. We cut that whole record. You know, I was sitting here in Belfast and Foy was sitting in the Highlands of Scotland and just doing the whole thing online through Zoom.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I go, all right, what about this? What about that? So it was a weird way to make a record, man, but, you know, it came out in the end. And as far as I can tell, Ed and the label were thrilled with it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it is a great record, and you've made a great video, Animal, and that single's out now, right?
It is indeed, yeah. That's out. It's out in the ether, in the world.
Out in the world. Hey, when you do this tour, are you playing solo or are you playing with a band?
I'm going to be part of Foy's band, the Headliners band, but I'm going to be playing on my own for my set.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be opening on my own. So I think I'm trying to get my head around all that at the minute. And I think I'm going to go between playing some piano and playing some guitar.
Okay.
And just kind of stripping the songs back to, well, essentially how they were written.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And just, you know, See how that go.
Yeah, are you playing keyboards and guitar with Foy?
I'm playing bass with Foy.
Okay.
Which is a strange one. It's not my first instrument. I'm a very frustrated bass player, you know, especially when I have to sing at the same time. It's like, you know, rubbing your tummy and patting your head.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a weird one because you're playing inside and outside of the pocket.
Right.
And then trying to sing. So it's a it's a challenge at the best of times, but you know, it's a good challenge. It's a good chance to stretch the brain a little bit.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, for my set, I think it's just gonna be me and my own acoustic guitar and piano.
You don't do any looping or anything?
No, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with that.
Yeah.
I've seen it done really, really well.
Yes.
And even then, I can kind of stick it for a couple of songs in a set.
Exactly right.
And then after that, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm kind of getting worn out waiting 3 minutes for the song to actually develop before somebody, you know, sings a word.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of pageantry to it, which is kind of cool for a moment. But when that's like the whole thing.
Yes.
I'm like, nah, cut me out.
I hear you. Do you know this guy named Steve Poltz? Great American songwriter.
No, I don't. I must check him out, Steve.
Steve Poltz, Poltz.
Poltz, I'm going to check it out.
He's an amazing, amazing songwriter, amazing performer. And he uses it on like two songs. And it's really, it's very intentional when he uses it. He shows you how he sets up this thing. You're part of it as the audience. And then it becomes this thing. But then the rest of the time, he's not. To me, it always seems like this thing where it takes you the length of a song to get to the beginning of a verse. That's the part that always, I'm always ready for a new song by the time they start singing.
That's exactly where I'm at, you know, turning 3 minute songs into 8 minute songs.
Yeah. And you know, like Guitar Center, like I'll go buy one every once in a while. I'll be like, well, I got this show coming up. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go buy one of those and I get it. And I have it for 2 days and I just return it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. You know, folks who, as you say, when it becomes like a moment in a set, that I think it's cool. And especially if it's done well, but you know, when that's the whole vibe, I don't know, man, it gets old very quickly for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what I've noticed is that like people don't really have, a bad time playing along with tracks now. Like it's not as frowned upon as it used to be.
Yes. So that's, I mean, I'm trying to work out my band set, you know, for like when I come home and start doing some shows and stuff in the UK. And I'm not entirely against that. I think the less that there is on track, the better. I mean, it's weird for me when I go to a gig and there's like this amazing brass saxophone break and there's no saxophone player on stage. I mean, that kind of, I'm like, all right, come on.
Yeah, you know,
the illusion has been shattered here.
Yeah,
but I've seen it done where there's some like incredible ambience stuff going on and stuff that's actually triggered live. So it is being played, but it may be played on like sample pad. Like perfect example would be like Bon Iver, like that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. There's a lot of track going on there when those guys play live.
Right.
But you don't, you know, it doesn't grab your attention in any way. It's totally secondary to what's happening live on stage. That side of it, I'm actually kind of intrigued with. I'm like, okay, well, that's something I've never done before. Let's check it out. There's on this record of mine, there's a bunch of ambient sounds. There's a bunch of, you know, reverb throughs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I could try.
Yeah.
And say, all right, well, how do we do that live?
Yeah. Well, those are always the tough things to do. Plus, those always do. What kind of venues? Oh, you're playing like the Birchmere and stuff, right? So kind of like theatery, listening room places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. For the most part, yeah, theater style venues. So that I'm kind of used to, you know, getting up and, you know, with six strings and a voice and trying to hold a room for half an hour.
Well, that's
I'm like, okay, I can get my head around that.
Yeah. If you can't entertain people for that long, with your instrument, your voice, and your great songs, then what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Exactly. Time to reevaluate.
Exactly. Well, man, dude, this record is fantastic, and you have a Patreon. What do people get for being in your Patreon?
So the Patreon thing was completely new to me it's only been up there for maybe not even 3 months. And it was a buddy of mine said, look, you've got all these, you've got hard drives full of songs that never have seen the light of day. Mm-hmm. You know, from the Nashville days and, you know, writing for this and writing for that and writing songs for movies and TV shows that just went into the hard drive. And he's like, you know, some of them are probably pretty good, you know, and you're never going to put them on an EP. You're never going to do anything with them. Why not try this Patreon thing?
Yeah.
So I was a little uncomfortable with it, but I said, okay, right. Well, here's the rule. Like, the rule is pay whatever you want. Like, literally pay as little as you want and just be nice. Let's try to make it a community for, okay, I'm going to throw out every week, I'm going to put up songs that I've written and explain why I wrote them from back in the day, and I'll pop them up there. And then people can tell me what they want to hear. You know, if they want to hear me covering something, I'll give it a go. And my hope is that it kind of just grows into what I always wanted, like Facebook, to kind of be, you know, back in the day.
A cool,
like,
community.
Okay, let's make it like a little, like a community where now we all know what Facebook is. You know, it's basically the white pages and it's pay to play. So I'm kind of like, okay, that might be a really nice way to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, dude, it's been great talking to you and it's been great meeting you. And
likewise,
I hope you do make it to Austin sometime. I will come out and see you. Your record Animal will be out April 22nd. People can find you at GarethDunlop.com. You'll be in the US from May 6th to the 31st. And then in the UK, you're doing, so far it's got you August 30th through September 9th, but I'm sure you'll probably be doing more than that.
More than likely. Yeah.
Yeah. But, man, it's been great talking to you and your record's really fantastic. Thanks so much for making it.
Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah,
appreciate
it, dude. I'll let you guys know when this goes up. It should be a couple weeks.
Nice one.
All right.
All right.
Nice meeting you, man.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
I like it quiet in my soul. So I can hear the earth turn.
All right, that's Gareth Dunlop. His album Animal is available now, today, wherever it is that you find albums and music. Go to GarethDunlop.com for all of your Gareth Dunlop needs. He will be on tour of the U.S. from May 6th to May 31st. So get out to GarethDunlop.com, see if he's coming to a town near you. Great talking to Gareth. And listen, I want to tell you guys, if you're new to the show, if you're Gareth Dunlop fans that happen to listen to this whole podcast, thank you for listening. I've got, you know, well over 1,100 shows back there. Everyone from Styx to Alejandro Escovedo, to Ray Wiley Hubbard, to all kinds of great songwriters, including Pat Byrne, who's an Irish singer-songwriter and won the Irish American Idol. So just download the Podbean app and you can access any episode of our 1,150 whatever. All right? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Have a great weekend. Get out there and check out Gareth Dunlop and his album Animal, which is out today. Let's get down.
Stubborn gambler that never falls, and in the avenues of my mind I lose the truth from time to time. Running it down, running it down. I get tired. I lean into things that aim to kill, to catch a thrill, but still the storms they echo. I've been a thousand men, I've lived and died over and over, over and over, over and over, searching and searching for the best me. The only time I love myself is when I'm in your stairs stripping. The only time that I love myself is when you're driving me away.